Mr. Gunnar Rundgren is from Sweden. He's the president of the International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements, which has members in over 100 countries in the world.
I'm also an organic farmer. I think after we heard from Anne, I was planning to say more or less the same as she said. So I would take a quite different stand on this from a more global perspective, or tackling the issue of food security, and in particular food security in developing countries where food security is a big problem, because all these things are tied together, the farm economy in Canada and the farming system in Africa or in Sweden or in Germany, we are all tied together in quite a global economy and global rules of the game. And especially in industrial countries, there is a tendency for the proponents of industrial agriculture to say, yeah, but you know, we need to produce more, we need to use more fertilizers, we need to use GMOs in order to feed the poor people that cannot produce the food themselves. And this is, to my understanding and to iPhone's opinion, a very big lie. There is really nothing indicating that it will help in any case, because the reason people are starving is not because there is a lack of food in the world. There is no lack of food in the world. There are people that are desperately poor and they cannot buy food anyway. It really doesn't matter whether you produce more. The only effect you have by increasing production in industrial countries and dumping it either directly as the EU do it or indirectly as the North Americans are doing it on developing countries is to lower the food prices in those countries and pushing farmers out of the market, creating disincentives for producing food for their own population. And we have seen, on the iPhone table tomorrow, you can pick up a recent study we done in iPhone, a 20-pager on organic agriculture and food security, where we quite clearly show that organic agriculture is actually a means for developing countries to get more food security. It is the same as ancestors. Organic agriculture is not a patent recipe for all kind of problems, because if you have a country with a lousy government, you have civil wars, you have all kind of problems apart from agriculture problems. Of course, people will not stop to starve just because they farm organically. But in the agriculture context, organic farming is very well adapted to the conditions of the poorest farmers, who are mainly producing for their own consumption. They do also produce for a market. But these farmers are poor, they cannot access, they cannot afford the inputs anyway, they cannot afford to buy GMO seeds anyway. So they are anyway excluded from these technologies. But by converting to organic, which is not a big step by the way for them, they can increase their production. If a European farmer convert to organic, normally the production will go down, say 10%, 15, 20, 30 even, depending on what crop they grow. But in developing countries, that's not the case, because they are coming from quite a different level. The production levels we operate in parts of Europe are just very, very high, and you cannot sustain those production levels with organic methods. But you can sustain very high productivity, especially when you can, as they can in developing countries, they can have very good intercropping technology because they are not so dependent on big machinery for harvesting, so they can actually have 10 different plants on the same field because they harvest manually, and then that works quite well. I think that can do as an introduction. Some of you will hear in 1 hour tomorrow.
I first met Joel Scrimger in 1982 at a farm conference, and we've become friends since then. Joel led the 3-hour seminar this afternoon, which was the organic soil test seminar, the most ambitious we've done yet. We brought in 5 certified growers and had Joel do their soil test in advance, and he presented a very technical side of organic farm production. So, Joel Scrimger from Michigan.
Somebody from Europe, that makes me feel like I'm not so far, just coming from Michigan. I guess the dollar economy side, not that it's everything, I think we know and understand that organics is about health and nutrition. But the health and nutrition thing has to go on into the economy too. That's really part of it, you know. But it is, I guess, actually a work in process. As far as what we see, as far as the grounding side of it or the growing side of it, production side, there isn't problems there. There's still some little things, hurdles along the way, but there's a problems that can be done. It's the final end of it in the marketing and making a truly just program out of it that has been happening. And I think I was one of the ones that said that organic is the little economy out there in the country right now. Because in my community, the quantities of system has failed very quickly. No matter how you really measure it. Whether it's in our local towns, or whether it's in our rural neighborhood, or whether it's relating to the healthcare system and the money, the sickness care system. I mean, that's the other end of it. It's showing the failure. So, how we're going to deal with that is a little bit of work in process. But we have a few points that we want to maybe hit on, and then your responses. From those of you that have heard me before, I feel that a balanced system is going to start from the soil. And we really can't try to do it other ways, or we can't hype the market on the other end unless we know it's done properly from the start. And not saying that there's any one set definition, but we got to know we have an essence of quality. And then we got to take that up through the process. And we got to understand something about economics that I really think has been left out in this growing cycle where you expand and function on cash flow. You really don't function on profit. And I realize that probably comes from across the bridge more than it comes from here, but I think you have some of that here too. You can cover up a lot of inefficiencies when you're in that growth mode and you're just working on cash flow. You're not really working on profit. So what is better for your local economy? But is it 100,000 acre farms or 1,000 head unit farms or larger? Or is it 100 acre farms or 100 cow unit farms? And some people say it equates to the same production. Well, not when you have 900 more people in the one equation that are actually making a living wage versus minimum wage, which what it sort of tends to come down to as we move to the mega farm system, which is definitely happening in my region. So there are some other things we need to do to make this equation balanced. And it was mentioned, the commodity thing. Small farms shouldn't raise big farm crops. We should raise small farm crops and focusing on diversity and some of the opportunities. We really got to take the quality thing, and we've got to get an understanding and understanding some of the science. We can't just, I know we know it's there, but we have to understand it. We have to confront them. I mean, we keep getting hit and all that, like on the GMO issue and whatever, that, it's... How's it? In the U.S. we have disparagement laws. You can't disparage an ag product with current science. And I'm saying, well, if you guys want to pass the laws, I don't really want to see you pass the laws, but if you do, I'm going to use those laws. And under current science, we'd be hands on. Whether it's GMO or pesticide use or food quality or pesticide residues or requirement, we'd be hands on. But we've got to know we've got our science in place and go ahead. We've got to understand some basic things in respect to dollars, and I think one little mile I'll just stop with, and I hope we get to put some other ones in. In our local community of Marlette, actually before I really become part of that community, they said they run a program called Marlette Dollars, and so it was they were having problems in the community, and they instituted this Marlette or put this Marlette Dollars program in place where you have like trading dollars, trading stamps, and they said, but the president of the chamber told me, but it didn't work. All the dollars ended up at the grocery store. And they just stopped it. It didn't work. And I came up, do you mean it didn't work, or did it show you where your system was broken? The grocery store doesn't buy anything from your neighborhood. They had no place to trade the dollars back. Everything comes from wherever, never mind, where food comes from. Even though we're a farm community. But they really have a hard time getting it. And I think the economy started, or has to start out in those rural communities, and then vice versa, that some of that has to start in that inner city community. In my neighborhood, we're north of Detroit. we have a situation there, and then you take the southern part of Detroit, we have communities that are on maybe the short end of the stick. And then the northern part of Detroit, that's number two per capita in the state, Oakland County. We have to understand where we're at, we have to understand how we're going to change it, and where the money's going to come from. And the money's there, you know, complications in the stock market, which are good, you know, and that's not, I don't understand the big surprise, you know, that what goes up must come down, that's basic law, you know, and if anybody really figured that it wasn't that way, you know, you just don't understand natural cycles at all. And our government has a little bit of a problem with that over there, too. So it's, this is an opportune time, a very opportune time. Because really, whether the cards or the moon signs or whatever are in alignment right now, I think they are. I mean, we can move ahead with this. And this can be the thing that repairs our local economy and in a physical health, or in a health-wise, and actually in economy-wise in our local communities. And whether that local community is rural or whether it's inner city.
Our next panelist is a political animal, literally. David is a federal candidate in Canada for the PC party, and he's also an organic farmer, which makes him a very unusual person.
Thomas, for the introduction. Yes, I was the candidate for the leadership of the Tory Party federally. I came second in that race 3 years ago, thanks to the support of many people like yourself. The question we were asked to deal with tonight was, can organic save the family farm? And my short answer is yes. I want to give a brief background of the existing situation, which in my view is dire, and then look at some of the solutions. We've seen 22,000 farmers leave the farm in the last year. In the last decade, since, incidentally, the free trade agreement between Canada and the United States came in place, Canadian farmers' net realized income has dropped 50%. In my province, Saskatchewan, the net realized farm income over the last decade has dropped 90%. We've seen Western freight rates triple, the loss of the two-price system for wheat, which guaranteed a higher price for wheat consumed in Canada to producers than what we exported it for, of course, it's abolished under free trade. We're seeing the elevators being ripped down in prairie towns, railway tracks ripped up, and whole communities dying. The federal minister of agriculture made a statement not too long ago that any farmer with sales under $75,000 should make a decision. So what he's essentially saying is half of the remaining farmers in this country should get out of the business. That will leave our rural landscape essentially a wasteland. And under the model of farming that we see today, the what I call the chemical industrial model, we're seeing a lot of problems, and we're seeing these problems grow. One of them, of course, is GMOs. In 1995-96, Monsanto introduced a GMO canola, Roundup Ready canola. That is now spread across the prairies to the point where 70% of the canola grown in the prairies is genetically modified, and it is cross-pollinated. It has contaminated all of the canola grown on the prairies, so that we've lost that organic market for canola. We can no longer even guarantee conventional canola, so the Europeans don't want to buy our canola. We've lost that market, and the Japanese are saying no. And I want to tip my hat to the organic farmers in Saskatchewan who just launched their lawsuit against Monsanto. Corn, of course, the GMO corn is widely grown, and Canada is becoming the world's third largest producer of genetically modified products. And now Monsanto wants to release a GMO wheat, and that will further devastate our industry because some two dozen countries of our customers around the world have said that they will not buy any Canadian wheat once we release a GMO wheat. So that would be devastating for our reputation and our sales around the world. There's massive opposition in the West to this. In fact, the only two organizations I know that are in favor are the federal government and Monsanto. People don't want it. We're told, and our guest from Sweden mentioned this about GMOs, we're told that there would be the necessary to feed a hungry world. That's not true, because GMOs don't increase the yield. In fact, the promoters of GMOs don't even claim that. 75% of GMOs are designed for one trait, that's pesticide resistance. So that, for example, Roundup Ready Canola, you can use Monsanto's product, Roundup, spray it on the canola, it doesn't kill the canola. They're designed to increase the profits of the companies that design these seeds and to increase the sales of pesticides. That's what they're designed for, not to feed a hungry world. People, there's no shortage of food in this world, as was pointed out, there's a shortage of money to buy it. The issue of the damage to our environment, the wildlife from pesticides and herbicides, the growing concern about the health effects of eating products that are sprayed with chemicals or that are modified genetically, these are key issues of our time. And I want to turn to the solutions. I want to suggest two solutions for consideration. And one, I believe, is organic agriculture. It's the fastest growing sector of agriculture in the Western world right now because of the concerns that I just mentioned. I attended the UPA convention in Quebec recently. That's the Union of Quebec Agriculture Producers. It's the most powerful farm lobby in Canada. Up to a few years ago, it was very much opposed to organic agriculture. And thanks to some of the farmers in this room from Quebec and the organic farmers in Quebec who fought, the UPA took a position and passed a resolution at this convention in December in favor, passed unanimously in favor of organic agriculture. So that's, and the Quebec Minister of Agriculture that spoke at the convention said that organics was the way of the future. So this is progress that's being made on this front. I agree, I've been an organic farmer for 27 years in Saskatchewan. When we started, it was regarded as a little bit of a fringe thing maybe, and now it's coming into its own for several reasons. Organics helps the farm income. There was a survey in Ontario done not that long ago of organic farmers, and only 15% of the farmers surveyed said that profit margins were a problem for them. When you contrast that to the terrible problems of conventional farmers in the rest of the country, you can see that the situation is better for farmers because the prices, there's a higher return. Organic agriculture stops a large percentage of the damage that's being done to the environment. It alleviates consumer concerns and it impacts directly on public health in a positive way, as was mentioned by our guest here from Michigan. And it stops the rural exodus. In fact, it does something to reverse the rural exodus as more people come back to the farms to pursue a different kind of agriculture, a different kind of lifestyle. But what we need is programs of transition to help farmers move from conventional agriculture into organic agriculture. And instead, our government today is putting all of its eggs into the basket of promoting transgenetic research. And it's actually, instead of helping organic agriculture, it's working with Monsanto to try to force the Europeans to take our products that are genetically modified. So they're on the wrong track. Canada has a real advantage. Canada is known around the world, it has a good image, it's known as a clean country. And this is an opening, organic agriculture is a tremendous opening for Canada. We should be moving our agriculture towards organics, and that would be a selling point around the world. Instead, of course, we're pushing, our government is pushing the GMOs to the point where Brazil now is claiming to be GMO-free, and they're advertising their agricultural exports as free of any genetically modified contamination, and they're beating us in what were once our own markets. So I'm calling on the government to introduce programs of transition. The Quebec government has recently given $1 million to Quebec farmers. That's to be much more, but at the federal level, that's something everyone in this room can do, is to push the federal government and your provincial governments to get off their duff and start actually doing something in terms of transition programs to organic agriculture. Instead, our government, of course, has cut the research programs across this country. We once had a state-of-the-art farm research sector, research farms across this country. Some of you will have heard of Morris Schnitzer, a world-class research, soil researcher in Ottawa. The program's cut from underneath him. This is the kind of research that we have to do. He was doing research on the impact of pesticides on the soil. This is the kind of thing that has to be done, and we need to have these kind of programs that allow farmers to move into organic agriculture. And just to wind up before Tom throws me off here, the second solution, we have to move away from the globalization model that we're following. It's been a disaster. It's been devastating for agriculture and for Canada's independence as a whole. You know, Argentina has followed the Bible of the free trade model. They even fixed their currency to the US dollar. And what has happened? As they did that, the US dollar strengthened, so the price of Argentina's exports went up, and everybody stopped buying Argentina's exports, and Argentina's in the pickle that it is in today. And yet we've got our economists telling us it's now time for us to adopt the US dollar as the common currency for North America. Perhaps we can avoid the problems that Argentina had if we do it right. This would mean the end of our independence and our sovereignty as a country, and it's not the model that we need to follow. There's countries doing different things. In closing, we can deal with more in the question period, but I just want to cite Norway, for example. Norway has stayed out of the European Union. It's not talking about adopting anybody else's currency. It protects its agriculture. It's got a thriving agricultural sector. It's got virtually no unemployment. It's got a thriving fishery. The cod fishery that we've destroyed is well and alive in Norway. And this is an example of a country that says, okay, we're going to look after our industries. We're going to build our industries. And Norway is now replaced. It's Canada at the top of the UN's list of the best countries in the world to live in. So these are models that we can follow. We don't have to head down this path, and the future can be changed, but we have to work hard to make that happen, and we can do that. Thanks very much.